Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is Chad, and I have a neurotic father.
This is Wayne.
My name's Pat.
And my name is Chris.
All right, so the neurotic father thing. Yes. Because we were talking about this. We're like, this is good conversation. We should record this. We were talking about television shows.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a television show in our topic list for today, and we got off on talking about 24.
Yeah.
Okay. And
which is not the television show.
Not television
topic,
show. Yeah. But, Chad, you were saying your dad is a 24 nut. Yeah.
It's his thing. I mean, my
dad... Has his world ended now?
No, no. I mean, he's, like, excited that it's coming to an end. Not that
when does it end? I thought it was this week, wasn't it?
No, it is done now. It did have its series finale.
That's what I thought. Series finale was, like, yesterday.
On Monday, the 24th.
Two-hour?
It was a big two-hour event, yes. Which, as of this recording time, I have not seen yet, but go ahead.
Well, I was mentioning to Chris that
I... And for anyone this word, we're not going to spoil. That's...
Chris is the only one to hear I've seen it.
I'm just amazed that 24 and Lost ended on the same week.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but different days.
The day after each other, Saturday,
days,
but
nobody
Sunday
cares
and
about
Monday.
Still huge show.
Well, I haven't watched it yet, but I've got it. It's sitting on my DVR at home, which is going to come up here in a second.
I could care less.
I'm glad
about
V got renewed. But
well, what's funny is that you're the way you were talking about 24 before we just started recording, and the fact that all this bad stuff happens to everybody, and you're just amazed by that. I was laughing because I was thinking, it's funny because... You think that's bad, and you don't watch Lost.
Oh, yeah, really.
It's so much worse than Lost.
If you
want
to see bad things happen to people, watch Lost.
Oh, my God.
Well, but so, even none of this, but that's not what we're going. Yeah. So, deck your dad.
My dad is, like, a huge 24 fan, to the point where, and I think I've told this story before, where if you call him up on, I think it's on Monday nights when 24 is on, he will pick up the phone and say, can't talk now, watching 24. And before you can even say anything or even hello, he will hang up on you. It could be the president of the United States telling him that he just is granting my dad the planet of Mars. And my dad will say, can't talk now, Obama, watching 24.
I bet he only answers it so he doesn't have that stupid ringing going while he's watching.
Oh, I'm sure that is too. He told me that he's been out with couples before, you know, him and his wife and their friends are out to dinner. They're having wine in a nice place to eat. And in the middle of the meal, not at the end or near the end, in the middle of the meal, he's like, okay, guys, I got just enough time to get home and watch 24. I'm out.
And so, of course,
he gets up and leaves. He says he told me that he has been in business meetings before because he's a businessman. Bosses around the meeting thing, people talk and give him presentations, and he raises his hand and says, ladies and gentlemen, I got just enough time to get home. I'm out. 24 is on.
And so my response is, get this man a DVR.
And I told Dan, it's like a DVR isn't good enough.
No.
That means that he will have to watch it later.
Yeah.
And later isn't now.
And I'm right there with your dad because up through until about the middle of day six, I was the exact same way. You had to watch it at that time. And now granted, what I had to do.
So many shaking heads.
What
here.
I had to do was because I knew that I had, you know, I had kids running around making noise. I did have to sacrifice that hour, and I would tape it in the early days. But as soon as it was done, that tape was rewound. I was sitting in front of there because all by that time, all the kids were in bed and it was quiet time. Dad's watching 24. Time to be quiet. Don't bother me.
I couldn't watch a show I cared about like that. I can't stand sitting there and waiting for the commercial break.
That is what I was going to say is if I'm sitting there and one of my favorite shows come on, like right now, there's really only two shows I'm heavily watching, which is V and House, which both their seasons just ended. But I could be sitting there and I look at the clock and be like, oh, House is coming on right now. Well, that means it's time to play 15 more minutes of Final Fantasy. Simply let the DVR get some lead time so I can fast forward through the damn commercials.
But for some reason, though, and I think this was part of 24's magic, was that
commercials?
Yeah, you actually relish the commercial breaks. You relish the commercial breaks coming because the cliffhangers on each segment were so good and so well done, and you were so into the show.
You know,
you needed that time to breathe.
You know why? Because I just started watching 24. You know, it's come to an end, and
I just don't see how the E-Trade baby
no, no.
is
so,
going to...
Yeah.
I am going.
You're not paying attention to the commercials. No, absolutely not. But you need that 4 minutes or 2 minutes if you're fast forwarding through them to just calm down and catch your breath and then go back into it.
This is what you don't understand, Dan. Is now I've just started watching it. I'm halfway through season one. It's the most unrealistic show I've ever seen, but it's very entertaining. I have seen Wizards and Warrior Fantasy that's more realistic than this show, but God hates these people.
But he loves their cell phones.
Every minute of these people's lives in this show, God is punishing them. It doesn't matter if you're a good guy. It doesn't matter if you're a bad guy. It is an hour after hour of the worst case scenario. The most horrible thing that can possibly happen to you will happen to you. And when you escape it into the jaws of something worse. And that's how it is. And it's like that. Every minute of the show is just intensity like that.
That is exactly how it is. The only saving grace that saves them is that they all carry around magic cell phones. And as the show goes on, cell phones are very important. It's amazing the amount of things that those magic cell phones can do. It's incredible.
You watch it and you see that the writers are like, well, we have to have this plot point happen to tell the story, to make the show go on, but we have magic cell phones, and the magic cell phones will defeat this plot, so we're going to contrive a way they're out of range. That's what defeats them all the time. Their cell phones are out of range, they don't have very good service, the batteries die, they turn off their cell phones because they're getting shot at, you know, they're sneaking around, they don't want the ringers to happen.
That's such a common trope.
Not to spoil anything for the later days, though, is that problem miraculously goes away when they start having product placements with the cell phone. When Sprint starts sponsoring 24, there are no coverage issues at all, ever. So now they have to write around that.
Wow. Yeah. I think that right there has just sold me on why I'll probably never watch the show.
Oh, you want me to sell you on why you'll never watch the show? Because it's the CTU. It's the counterterrorism unit of like the CIA or the FBI, right? Elite government squad. And in their office, they have racks of Dell computers there because I guess Dell's doing a sponsorship. And then they have all these high-tech phones, high-tech gadgets, high-tech equipments. And every single goddamn desk has a Mac on it. The CIA does not use fucking Macs. You cannot convince me of that. This is the most unrealistic part of the show. They had a car slide off a cliff and gently crash into a tree. Should have deployed the airbags, but oh no. The car was made of kerosene and duct tape, and it exploded into a huge ball of fire. No, that is more realistic than the idea of the CIA using Macintosh. That's ludicrous.
Now, I will have you know, if that car was held together by duct tape, it would have held together, not exploded. They have proven that on Mythbusters.
Yeah,
absolutely. By God. Duct tape would have contained the explosion.
But there's a lot of totally unrealistic stuff in 24.
I went through this all the time when I was still in the office environment. And even now, still sometimes like family gathering and such, of everyone's, we got to have the coffee. I need the coffee to wake me up. I need the coffee to pick me up. Everyone's trying to shove damn coffee in my face.
I drink coffee because it tastes good.
And it's like, no, I'm an extremely high-strung individual.
No, you're not.
Say what?
I need something.
No.
It's like, I need something to bring me down. Why do I want coffee? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of the same thing. I'm not sure I need a TV show that's like a cocaine heart attack.
No, I will tell you,
coffee,
Dan, that
coffee to move my bowels.
I find 24 to be very entertaining.
Do you pee on Julie while she's changing you?
Yeah.
Only if that's anytime I'm able.
Right after his coffee enema. He doesn't drink the coffee. He takes it rectally.
Dan, it's not
that might have been the funniest question you've asked him in 3 years.
I'm sorry, Chip, but you have to admit that was worth it.
Yes, yes. So anyway, Dan, 24, you should never watch it. Because I know you. I know what you like. I know what you dislike in shows because we've been married for 30 years. It's not the intensity that will turn you off about the show. It is the unrealistic aspects that will turn you off the show. They're flying over the U.S. in a jet. And this happens in the first, like, 3 or 4 episodes. So if this is spoiling it for you, well, you should have watched the show 6 years ago. I'm sorry. But they're flying over in an airliner.
Okay.
The chick does her thing. She's super spy chick. She doesn't know where she is. She's a passenger on board, right? She's a passenger on the airplane. She lines the door, one of the exits, with detcor, plants a bomb. blows the death cord, gets sucked out the window, and she has a parachute, blows the bomb up, blows the plane up, lands perfectly in the middle of the night, not knowing where she is, jumping off an airliner she has no control of that she just blew up, in a probably 20-foot diameter ring of flares in the middle of the desert, in the middle of the night, not near anywhere. Perfect landing.
Wow.
How the hell did she even find that?
There are some things that I'm willing to say, and this is going on a limb.
And every episode is like this.
Batman could not do that.
No.
You Whoa. Shut your mouth.
Whoa, you sir, shut your whore mouth.
Batman. No, he would at least have...
What do you love, Superman?
He would at least have a GPS device to tell him when he's getting close to the flare.
Yeah.
There'd be some middle step there to explain how he did this.
I bet this bastard thinks that Spider-Man could do it.
Yeah. Well, and just to look extra cool, it's the middle of the night, right? Just look extra cool.
What are you
cool.
now, Joe McCarthy?
Just to look extra cool, she puts on goggles, and the goggles are as dark as welding goggles. They look awesome. I'm sure they were like $500 pair of sunglass goggles. But it's you're skydiving in the middle of the night into an unlit desert, and you put on sunglasses. As if it isn't hard enough. She should have had a cactus enema when she landed. But no, perfect landing right in the middle of this ring of flares.
It's a good show.
Yeah, it's a good show. It's a very good show.
Sounds like it. Sorry, I missed it.
This is about as good as the sales pitch we were given for Red Dead Redemption. What was Chad's two-part sales pitch for Red Dead Redemption? It was two things. That's what it was. It was, so in Red Dead Redemption, you can lasso a nun, hog tie her, carry her to the train tracks, put her on the train tracks, and have a train splatter her. And there's co-op play. Yeah. That was a sales pitch we were given for Red Dead.
But you know what? That's a fun game. I told you, I just got it. I just got it yesterday.
Oh, I'm not saying it's a bad game.
No, I'm not.
I'm just saying there's a reason Chad's in server administration and not marketing.
Well, yeah. But no, it's a fun game. I'm loving it. I just started playing it. I'm having a little bit of problem with it, though. I'm kind of stuck because I'm still trying to figure out how I can f*** a prostitute on my horse and then, of course, kill her and take back my money.
Well, I'm sorry to say that I'm pretty well into the game and you cannot have sex with prostitutes as of yet. He's a married man and he's loyal to his wife.
Mm.
I don't know how to change that.
Yeah, well.
So,
We did have a show.
Doctor Who.
Yeah, we did have a show somewhere in here. All right, so two things real quick. Related things, so they're not going to sound related at first. The first is, obviously, duh. Gen Con 2010 is coming up here in August.
Yeah, they need us to pimp it.
Last year, we did the Toft Bitch thing, the official Fear of the Boot Communications
My
Hub.
My Toft Bitches!
And what the official Fear of the Boot Communications Hub is we have a couple great guys, that have taken it upon themselves, and God bless them for this, where if you supply them with a cell phone number,
buy them some beer.
We do that anyway. But what they do is they provide sort of a con within a con, that if you're at Gen Con and you can't make it to an event or don't want to make it to an event or you don't know a lot of people there, you just want to hang out with people that you share something in common with, what'll happen is in the middle of the day, somebody would be like, beer run, sushi run, doing a pickup game of whatever at this place, and they will tell the Toff Bitches, and the Toff Bitches will then blast out a message to everyone, and we will basically keep this rolling party going throughout the entire weekend. And I was not there last year, but I have been told by everyone who was involved, Toff Bitches, fans, and hosts alike, that it was just an outstanding success. We are doing it again this year.
And you're actually showing up.
I'm showing up, barring any major catastrophe. And they have asked, and of course I have agreed, to use Con Planner, the site we use for Fear the Con, to make their job a little bit easier. So if you are interested in going to Gen Con this year and being involved in the Toft Bitch thing, what you need to do is go out to www.conplanner.com/GenCon2010, GenCon 2010, and I'll link this in the show notes. Be sure to sign up for it and add yourself as an attendee. Now, despite the name, we're not in any way officially affiliated with Gen Con. The only thing that they have asked, they being the Toff Bitches, is the way they do this is they use a series of cell phone apps to blast out these messages. So in order to reach you, they need your cell phone number.
Yeah.
So if you are going to sign up for it, you need to do one of two things. The first thing is when you create your account on Con Planner, or if you already have one from Fear the Con, there is a new field on there for cell phone number. You need to go in there and leave an accurate cell phone number so they have some way of reaching you. If for some reason you just do not want to do that, then you can hop on the forums and send a PM to any of the guys that are involved in it, which is Zeke Copper Eyes, Aaron Stack, or Necronomatron, who's also the guy we did Rain His Wings with. Send a PM to one of those guys with your cell phone number. Just be sure you get them your cell phone number in some fashion. They have told me it would be easiest for them if you just put it on Con Planner. And if you're worried about it, put it on there after Gen Con's over. Go back to your profile and erase it. But get out there, and once again, I'll link this in the show notes so you can go straight out there and get signed up.
If you use the Toff Pitch Network, know that these guys are volunteering their time. They're super fans. They're doing it because they love us. They love the community.
They love you guys.
And they love you guys. And if you just so happen to be at Gen Con and you get some enjoyment out of the Toff Pitch Network and you happen to be in a bar with these guys, I know they're drinkers. So, you know, raise a glass,
buy them a drink, shake their hands. Yeah, don't do it for us.
Pat them on the back. This is almost independent of us.
Yes.
We just get...
We will be working the con. Yeah. I mean, we'll be video blogging. We'll be maybe trying to line up some interviews for later down the road. There are things that we will be doing that you guys will probably benefit from in some ways. But this Toff Bitch thing, that's these guys.
Yeah.
Whatever enjoyment that the community gets out of this, don't thank us. Thank them.
Because they're awesome.
Yeah, from the sounds of it, last year, Chad talking about it, it sounded like for him, it was just, he's another person that's, you know, taking advantage of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this year, with Chris not being there, but me being there, I'm going to try to pick up some of the slack and be sure that I'm running some events. You guys are welcome to run events as well. If you're bored, whatever, let's not beat this to death, but get out there, get signed up for that if you're going to be at Gen Con. Now, the related topic to that is, as you guys probably know by this point, unless this is your first time tuning in, for Fear the Con 3, we built our own convention solution on conplanner.com, which we use to handle sign up, ticketing, ticket purchasing, the actual paying for the tickets, event creation, signing.
Because all the websites out there that handled this were a pain in the ass.
Or non-existent. There are very few tools, and the tools out there we found generally did not fit what we wanted. In the process of using ConPlanner, we were contacted unsolicited by a bunch of different conventions of varying size who basically wanted to know if we would ever open this up so that other people could use it. The answer is yes. ConPlanner is now open, and there are still a handful of bugs and a bunch of wishlist features that I am actively working on taking care of. And if you're curious what those are, if you go to ConPlanner, there's an About page linked from the bottom of the site that you can click on to get a complete list of what it is I'm doing with the site. But as of right now, there is a stable and complete edition of that site running with admin tools. So if you are running a local convention and have no way of doing it easily, and you're tired of reconciling everything by Excel or pieces of paper, or if you're running a big convention, I won't name drop because I don't think it's my place to, but we've been approached by some very big conventions looking to use it. This site is capable of handling that capacity. But if you have a convention you run and you're looking for a way to handle event signup, ticketing, you want to be able to print out attendee lists and print out what's going on at different locations, this site has stuff to do that. We don't have everything on the wish list done, but it does work end to end. At least get out there and check it out. And it is free of charge. I am not charging anybody a damn thing to use this tool. So if you have a con coming up you're involved with and are looking for an electronic solution, get out there, create a convention, play around with it, see what you think.
And if you use Con Planner and you got enjoyment from it and you're at Gen Con, Dan's a drinker.
Also, if you get out there and use it and notice things that you think would help make it a better site, this is a work in progress. Don't hesitate to let me know. But even in the meantime, believe me, it saved us a ton of work at Fear the Con, and I believe it'll be useful to your convention as well. So there you go, and there you are. All right, let's get to the TV show we were intending to talk about originally, which was not 24, which was Doctor Who.
Yes.
And Chad, you wanted to start out with a quick shout out to someone who has sent some stuff your way.
I just want to give a quick shout out and to say a big thank you to Andrew Horvitt. He knows why, and I can't really say why. He's just feeding a certain addiction that I have that involves Doctor Who.
Doctor Who is one of those things that I don't think in the history of Fear the Boot, despite mm-hmm. being one of those archetypal geek pursuits, mm-hmm. and despite the fact that we have had many hosts, both present and past, mm-hmm. that watched it, we have ever talked about.
Okay, yes. It's been two episodes since I've had an embarrassing admission. When I was younger, I used to watch Doctor Who, you know, every Sunday night.
Mm-hmm.
So
local PBS station.
Local PBS yep. station. So I was probably around 10 or so, and I took a pen. I went into my closet with a flashlight.
Whoa!
And
whoa,
I drew
Family Show.
I drew a TARDIS door on the inside of the closet. So as a 10-year-old playing Doctor Who at home. And this is still at my parents' house. My parents actually have that room now.
Smaller on the outside than it was on the inside?
Yeah. But my parents' house, they still have this room. You open the door to that closet, and there is a TARDIS drawn on the inside of the door.
Oh, wait, so you didn't draw it on a piece of paper?
No, I drew it on the inside wall of the closet.
Wow, I bet they appreciated that.
They didn't realize it till long after I'd moved out.
Doctor Who holds a very, very special place in my heart. Dan can attest to this. I'm not a nostalgic person. I really don't hold nostalgia as something that's very important to me. I'm very now, and I like things in the now, and I like new things. Doctor Who is one of those exceptions. I am incredibly nostalgic about Doctor Who because I used to watch it every Sunday night on our local PBS station here in America with my mom. For a little kid, that was a big thing because it was on at like 10 o'clock at night, and I stayed up late on a school night and I got to watch this cool science fiction
show. Well, you know what's funny, though?
It wasn't like anything else on television.
Do you remember the Doctor Who fan club they had in the area?
Yeah.
It was called the Celestial Intervention Agency, yeah. CIA. So I'm in about fifth,
the show.
Right. I'm about fifth grade or so. I'm on the playground. I get everyone to agree to play CIA. I have no idea why they're pretending they have guns and things. There's no guns in Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Well, there are, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You know what I don't understand? Being the official FASA podcast,
mm-hmm.
we never played the FASA Doctor Who game.
I could never get my hands on it.
Yeah, we never. I think by the time that we really became fans of the company and gotten mm-hmm. to Battletech and Shadowrun and Renegade Legion.
Well, and to be honest,
and all
the
stuff they were doing,
you were the one who was buying the games because you were running the games.
Yeah,
and you weren't a fan of Doctor Who.
Yeah, I just
you're not a fan of Doctor
Who. Yeah, and we'll get
because you don't like happiness in life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We would like for you to tell us why you're not a fan, so we can tell you you're wrong.
We'll come back to that. For the three of you on the show that do watch Doctor Who, Chris doesn't either, so we'll grill him as well.
Never have.
Let's ask the required geek question.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Baker.
Okay, Tom Baker.
Chad. John Pertwee.
David Tennant.
Okay. Oh, you...
Okay.
See, well,
David Tennant,
to qualify that. Wait, what did you say, Pat? Did you say gay lieutenant?
Yes,
that's exactly what I said.
That's exactly what I said.
You know, for me, the qualifying that is that
Chris,
where I grew up, we did not have...
Stop, Pat.
No, I'm not going to stop.
Yes, you are going to stop. Chris, it is a British show. He would have said gay lieutenant. Continue, Pat.
Sorry, yes, okay.
I can't believe Chris's cultural insensitivity.
Yeah, it's astounding. No,
it's a different generation.
Yeah. I'm newer to the Doctor Who phenomenon, just mainly because
you didn't watch the old stuff?
I didn't have the opportunity.
Huh.
I didn't have it on our local PBS station growing up in Springfield, Missouri. I had never heard of it until
my childhood.
Yeah, so I did not
pick it up on the cow patties.
You guys live in a black hole? Yeah. I mean,
so yeah, so I didn't have access to Doctor Who really
so
growing
David
up.
So David Tennant is your first Doctor.
Well, Christopher Eccleston was my first Doctor Who. My favorite is David
Tennant,
because those are the ones I've seen.
Briefly, why are you each voting for the people you vote? So let's start with Wayne. You went first with Tom Baker. Yep. Why? Briefly.
I think a lot of people say that your first Doctor is your Doctor, and in my case, that's true. The first Doctor I saw on TV was Tom Baker. I saw more Tom Baker than any others at that time. So that's the one that cemented in my mind as the Doctor. I'd like to say there's some better reason for it, but no, he was my first Doctor.
Okay, Chad Pertwee.
Well, John Pertwee came before Tom Baker, but actually two other doctors came before John Pertwee. And Tom Baker was my first Doctor, but Pertwee is kind of different. There's a certain dark edge about him, and there's like this zany humor, and then at a moment's notice, his Doctor switches to this sort of dark, angry Doctor. He's the only Doctor that knows Venusian karate. It's really funny to see him flip stuff. He's got a yellow car, but also more than that, my favorite character in Doctor Who is not the Doctor, not one of the Doctors. My favorite character in Doctor Who is Brigadier Alistair Lethbridge-Stewart. And I just really like that character as a kid. In fact, here's my geeky story. Growing up, my dad was not around a whole lot because he was a workaholic who worked 80 hours a week and traveled all the time.
Yeah, this is before 24.
Yeah, this is before he got 24. And to a five-year-old kid watching Doctor Who, Lethbridge-Stewart is this sort of man's man. He's a military guy. He's very strict. He's very this and that. And it's like this vision of manhood. It, like I said, I don't want to get too Freudian with it. I don't want to get too psychological with it. But I kind of saw this sort of male figure, and I guess it's pathetic that I saw a male figure in a TV character because my dad wasn't around enough when I was a kid, but I did, and I really liked that character, and I really see it as...
So this is probably too strong of a word, but I don't have my thesaurus handy, but idolize, I realize that's too strong of a word.
Yeah, like I don't have pictures of him, and I didn't start the fan club, and I don't have a Lethbridge-Stewart tattoo.
But there's something about him you kind of looked up to as far as a fictional character.
As a five-year-old, and as a 10-year-old, I really looked up to him as a fictional character, and then he was part of an organization in Doctor Who called UNIT, and I am a really, really big fan of UNIT. And it's basically a UN military organization. Yeah. United Nations.
I kept it under control as best I could, but it's something.
It's the United Nations Intelligence Task Force.
Chris is a big fan of units, too. So yeah. Don't worry.
Well, I just can't keep a straight face when Chaz talking about his unit.
Well, these units rolled around and killed aliens when they landed on Earth. That was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I would absolutely love it. See, they've done spinoff shows, and I've always been hoping my entire life that they would do a unit spinoff, but they never have.
All right, so Pat. David Tennant, right?
Yeah, David Tennant. And, and for me, going back to like what Wayne said, well, yes, that's true. Going back to what Wayne said, you know, usually it's your first Doctor Who's your favorite. And in my case, that almost was the truth because, like I said, I started with Christopher Eccleston and I loved him. But it's kind of interesting when I first started watching this because I'd heard of Doctor Who, obviously. I mean, it's that British show, never seen it. And then all of a sudden it's coming back and it's going to be on, you know, BBC America. And I'm like, cool,
that was huge.
I'm going to be able to see this thing. Yeah. I'm going to give it a shot and see what all this is about. Cause you know, you hear about this for years. It's this huge show. I'm like, cool. I can give it a try. I recorded the first episode with Christopher Eccleston and I watched it and I hated it. This is horrible. It is horrible.
I was a little disappointed.
And I said, you know what though? By God, I'm gonna give it one more chance. And that next episode, I don't even remember what it was. I just remember that I was blown away. So, it was
the end
it
of
was,
the world.
It was awesome. Loved it. I fell in love with that next episode, and I've been hooked ever since.
I watched the first of the new series, the new David Oswald one. Took place on Earth, took place in a factory. It had
mannequins.
Cheesy mannequins.
It was the mannequin. I'm like, you've got to be kidding.
And it was
the plastic
silly.
Came to life and was trying to kill everybody.
It was stupid. And I watched this whole thing and I'm like, oh my God.
Why is the doctor wearing a leather jacket?
This thing had been on hiatus for a long time. It coming back was
since
huge.
96.
So yeah, and it coming back was huge. Huge fan of it. I'm like, wow, they really dropped the ball on this one. So stupid. I told myself when I got to the end of it, I'm like, I'm not going to watch this show again. I'm not going to watch this again because they just blew it. They totally blew it. And then they did the closing credit, and then they said, next week on Doctor Who. And I'm like, because I sat through the entire credits going, wow, they just really shit all over this show. The opening credits to it was not in present day, not in a factory, not with plastic mannequins. It is the Doctor and his new friend, his companion, they're called, get off the TARDIS, and they say, I give you something like that. I'm messing the lineup, but it's the end of the world. And they show a view from space,
it's
Earth.
They are going to
show Earth being destroyed. Not by aliens, not by any of this sort of stuff, but the sun's going to go supernova, and it's the end of the Earth. And then they showed all these aliens, and then they showed this alien that was the last human being. And it was a piece of skin that had eyes and a mouth. And it was a stretched out flat piece of skin that was being kept alive in a brain in a jar. That was the last pure human being.
That episode illustrated something I love about the show. Yeah. Things that happened in that episode were threads that were picked up for the next three seasons.
Yeah.
These characters started coming back in later episodes.
And I watched that. I'm like, wow, that's a hook. That hooked me in, and then I've been watching.
Let me pick on something you said in there, which you guys were talking about before. I have seen in my life two episodes of Doctor Who, and I will eventually get to why I don't watch it, but I've seen about two episodes of Doctor Who. One was years ago, Chad, I watched one with you. I have no idea who the Doctor was, but I can remember the plot. They were in some kind of a relatively low-tech society, and there was some kind of a snake cult.
Mm-hmm.
And the snake cult was trying inadvertently or without knowing to bring back some kind of a snake god that was like going to kill them all.
Mm-hmm.
And the Doctor, there was all this mystery and intrigue, and I don't remember all the details in his out's plots, but he eventually gets a hold of this crystal where through like force of will, he's able to destroy this spirit and drive it away. Or I'm probably butchering the plot because I saw it years ago. The second episode I saw was right when they revived it. And it first appeared on Sci-Fi Channel. I'm sure it was on the BBC a couple weeks before or whatever.
Yeah.
But right when they revived it here recently, the most recent set of them, it was a plot that had something to do with aliens were trying to use nuclear power plants or power plants built into the Earth to basically blow up the Earth to get energy. Mm-hmm. Or I don't remember what they were trying to do. Something along those lines. And I remember the show was really kind of boring. The previous one was really good. This one was kind of boring. I thought his assistant was really hot. And that was really about far. But there's something you guys were talking about as fans about the assistants in some ways being more defining of the show, or the companions being more defining of the show than the doctors. And I wonder if that's somewhat because the Doctor, while it's radical reinterpretations, it's still the same character. Now, it's radical reinterpretations, but it's the same character.
Since 1969.
Whereas the companions really are completely different characters.
Yes. And that's how it was, because I have decided to do The Task. The show started in 68 or 69, I forget which one. And I have decided to watch every single Doctor Who that can be watched. There are a handful of episodes that are lost, that were destroyed and unrecoverable. But I am watching every single one in order, beginning with the first season. And in the first season, that is very, very true. It was a guy by the name of Hartnell who played the first Doctor, and he's an old man. He's an old man in the show, and he doesn't have very many lines. He doesn't do very much. He's whimsical, and he's kind of an ass, and he's really weird. The companions who's with him are two school teachers and the Doctor's daughter, or granddaughter, and they are very strong characters. They're very interesting. They're the ones who go out, and they're the ones who do things, and they're the ones who have the fights, and they're the ones who have the adventure, while the Doctor just kind of sits back and keeps up, and they go to him for advice and that sort of thing. And that held true through a lot of the Doctors until basically sort of kind of with Pertwee, but then with Tom Baker.
Yeah, that was the real shift where the Doctor comes into the spotlight a lot more, I'd say.
I mean, the show is about him, and the show centers around him, but the stories are told through the eyes of the companion until Tom Baker in the 70s. Tom Baker is the defining Doctor. If you ask anybody who knows anything about Doctor Who, chances are they know exactly who Tom Baker is, because he really was a very strong character, a very cool Doctor.
He did it for a long time.
He holds the record for the longest run as the Doctor, and it was really about him, and he had some really cool companions too and some very cool storylines, but he was also very funny and very dramatic and very sciencey and stuff, and it was very neat.
Is that the guy with the blonde curly hair?
No, he is he's dark hair, but it is curly. He's the guy who has a very long scarf and the robot dog.
All right, that's what I'm thinking of.
Now, what you described there is the reason why I have never gotten into Doctor Who.
Long scarf and a robot dog?
Exactly. When I was a child, a long scarf and a robot dog did things to me that I've still not fully...
So you didn't watch the original Battlestar Galactica then either, did you?
It's really
or
more,
Buck Rogers.
I think it's partially my completionist neurosis.
That's right.
Do not ever make that noise again. But I have this completionist neurosis, which comes out the most in video games. Yeah. I'm the sort of guy, or if I play Final Fantasy, I have to...
Oh, if you're a completionist, do not get into Doctor Who.
And I think that was part of it.
It's been on for like 40 years.
Yeah, well, one of it was, to me, the series seems impenetrable for two reasons.
Because it holds the Guinness Book of World's record for the longest running science fiction show in history.
Yeah. And that's why it seems so impenetrable, is one... Because of its length. I can never possibly watch all of it. Even if I forget the lost shows, I just go with the stuff that is available on DVD or the internet or videotape somewhere.
Hundreds of episodes. I don't think you need to do that. Well, I
don't either.
The second point, and this is where your counterargument, I think, would probably have more relevance, is I think I hold this concern that because of the fact that even though these episodes more or less stand on their own, they do draw from themes, topics, enemies. When this guy shows up, people that are fans are like, holy crap, that's the so-and-so who, with three previous doctors, nearly did this and that and the other. And to me, it's like, okay.
The most recent episode that came out in America, not the one that's in Britain, because I've seen up to the British stuff. Thank you, Andrew Corbett. But he did something, and it was just a gag. It was just a 1 second. It was on the screen for 10 seconds, and it reached back 40 years all the way to the first.
Yeah, and that's impenetrable. I mean, when the master shows up,
but if you don't,
I have no idea who he is or what he's done. You know, okay, I won't get that.
So the reason I don't think this is an issue: one, we've got Pat, who didn't watch the old show. He came in, he doesn't feel lost. My wife didn't really watch much of the old one. She came in, she didn't feel lost. But it goes back to the companions. We may have seen this, Chad and I being fans for years, but the new companion has no idea what a Dalek is, has no idea what a Cyberman is. Every time they're introduced to a new companion, they're introduced to the audience who never saw him before as well.
Yeah.
So there, it has that built-in ability without to bring people in without it, watching
without
40
years. Without making it feel tired. The producers of the new show are able to do it really well because they take the old stuff, they update it a little bit so it's not a guy in a plastic suit where you see the zipper, which it was in the 60s and 70s and even 80s, but they update it enough to where it's pretty cool for modern audiences. They're able to explain what it is without geeking out into Doctor Who lore and without being tiresome. You know, and that's what I think that the biggest trap would be is that, okay, here's another thing. Here's something from the past. We have to explain it again, and we have to give this 60 years of history. They don't do that. They are very good at being able to explain, this is what it is, here it is, really
and
quick.
They know that this new series coming back, it's been a long time since the show was on. They came in knowing we're going to have new viewers. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, when you're watching it, you know, you can tell that they're taking this from the standpoint of people may not have any clue who these characters are. So everything feels fresh. I mean, the first time you see a character, we may know who it is from earlier episodes, but it doesn't feel like it's being rehashed to us. And for people who haven't seen it, it doesn't feel like they're missing out on anything.
Yeah. The current one they just released in Britain that I just saw called The Hungry Earth, the main bad guy in it is from, I think it's from a Tom Baker. And it was only in like one or two episodes. They don't even mention that it has been on the show before. It doesn't matter that it's been on the show before. The Doctor runs into stuff all the time that we don't know about that he's run into before, just as a plot hook. And
you know, they did the same thing when the Cybermen showed up for the first time. Cybermen have been in the show since nearly the beginning.
Cybermen are extinct in the show, and they were able to bring them in. They reinvented them because they brought them in a different, using sci-fi tropes of alternate realities and stuff. And they were
and they don't have to explain that to you because he's having to deal with them as something new.
As a new
and
threat.
The companions have never seen one before, just like, you know, you as a new viewer have never seen it before.
Okay, so do they update the costumes?
Yes.
Yeah. Having seen pictures of Daleks and Cybermen, I mean, they were all pretty absurd low-budget costumes.
I don't know. The Dalek stuff
looks pretty close to the same.
I mean, Daleks are pretty cool, in my opinion. I mean, people see them and, they got the silly voice, and then they've got the plunger for the hand, and that's all kind of silly and stuff.
The Sultarans were updated quite a bit.
Yeah, the Daleks look silly and stuff until they slaughter and enslave your entire world. And then they're not so silly anymore. You know, it's just like, that thing, and then zzz, and then you see this guy's skeleton, and he's a pile of dust. It's like, you know what, I don't think I'm going to make fun of the Dalek, because he'll kill me. I've seen the very first episode that had Daleks in it, and I've seen the most recent one that had Daleks in it, and they're very, very similar. They haven't gone through much changes, except one Dalek is nearly indefeatable in the new show because of the technological advancement, because of what they are, because of the story, because of the 40 years of history. The first Daleks had guys doing running tackles of them and jumping on them and pulling them down. I mean, it's like a band of five guys took on a couple of Daleks. Yeah, sure, a couple of guys got shot, but once you tip them over, they can't get back up. And they play that out in the show.
You know, they did that in the show because when they first, I think when he, I seem to remember when he first encountered them in this new version, he's like, oh, it's all right because they can't make it up the stairs. And then he starts hovering. And he's like, oh, crap.
Defeat them with stairs. Yeah,
like, that's how they used to defeat them.
They're like, don't worry, he won't be able to make it up that stairs. It's like, oh, crap.
Some of the things I've always wondered when watching Star Trek is the Borg adapt and you phasers or whatever, and their shields will keep adapting to absorb them. But at no point do they ever produce a force field that stops your physical contact with their body. So people just walk up and punch them.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, at some point in the history, I think the show used to be about role-playing games. So there's...
Like the Doctor Who role-playing game?
Yeah.
I still want to get my hands on that. We worked it in.
Well, isn't there a new one?
No.
I thought somebody...
There's one that's not out yet.
Okay, it's in
development. It's coming out. Yeah. Mm. Fans know I'm a huge Doctor Who fan, and I've had people send me links and stuff, and I'd
be curious to hear what you would play in that game. I know there's an allusion to there being other Time Lords or whatever.
So, there's spinoff shows.
Right.
There's like Canine Adventure and Torchwood. I don't think I would have any fun whatsoever playing a Doctor Who role-playing game. I was going to run a Torchwood St. Louis game at Fear of the Con if we had overflow. And I told a couple of people there that at the end of the con, and we were talking about, oh, well, what would you have done if blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I would have done a Torchwood St. Louis thing, and here's my concepts that I would have done for it. And I had people like, why in the hell didn't you run that?
What? I'm throwing the gauntlet down on you. I want that game at Gen Con because I want to play in it.
Really?
Yes. I am challenging you to run
Torchwood
St. Louis at Gen Con.
Because I was going to do it to where everyone was British and the U.S. government doesn't know Torchwood is in St. Louis and they have to keep it a secret. Because St. Louis is the most haunted city in the country.
It is, actually, yeah.
And I would have played that as a sci-fi element, not actual ghost. It's
just for amusement's sake, I'll see if I can dig this up, maybe like in the show notes. But there is a site called Haunted Missouri or maybe even Haunted St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And you would not believe the number of major ghost stories, like really well-known ghost stories that either come directly from or at least some point pass through the St. Louis area. Mm-hmm. The
exorcism.
The exorcism. So here's the best transition in podcasting history. Total, there's not a non sequitur here at all.
No.
Since we were talking about Doctor Who companions, you can also, in role-playing games, sometimes have animal companions or familiars.
That is fascinating.
I see what you did there.
Very clever, okay. Mr. Bond.
So that leads me to a story.
No, actually, your story led to this. Yeah. So.
Okay. So basically, my wife and I, we're going out to get flowers and things for the house, and we're going to her aunt's flower shop, and we come home with a cat. How this happens... Even my head's still spinning on it.
Carl and I have a strict no humane society, no pet store rule, because if we go into one, we will come home with another animal.
Yeah, so we go there, the cat's wandering around. I ask her, okay, well, what do you want to get? Thinking, I'm talking about flowers. And she points to the cat. And then her aunt starts giving us this sob story about how they've had this cat. They just got her. She's a kitten. They're right on the road. They're afraid she's going to wander out. And my wife's giving me the puppy dog eyes. I'm like, okay, fine. So we take this thing home, we've got it for a week or two, and we're noticing she's getting really fat. We're thinking, okay, we're watching her. She's eating the dog's food. She's eating the other cat's food.
Oh, yeah, that's it.
And it's like...
She's eating the dog.
At least the cat's still a virgin.
She's eating everything, and everything she can get her hands, paws on.
It's a boy cat. That's what we don't understand.
But yeah, she's eating everything she can get her paws on, and she's just getting bigger. I'm talking to my wife one day, and I'm like, man, she's only getting bigger around the stomach. If she wasn't a kitten, if she wasn't too young for it, I'd think she was pregnant.
There's grass in the field.
I go to work that night. And I'm working
on the
late,
table.
And I get a call at midnight. And it's my wife. She's like, and she's like nearly sobbing. And she's just like, God, he's having kittens. What? She's a kitten herself. She can't be having kittens.
She's clutching her teddy bear while she's popping out kittens.
By the end of the night. They're just so young these days.
By the end of the night, we've got five kittens.
Babies having babies.
It's the growth hormones and the cat food.
Yeah.
So I already give in and take, I've already given in and taken this cat. Now we have a house with kittens in it. So anyone in the St. Louis area that wants a kitten, their eyes actually just opened last night. So pretty soon we'll be ready to give out
kittens. You don't just have a house with kittens. How many other animals do you have? This was the last in a line of others. You started with You were at one point, you were down to one animal, right? One dog.
No, we started, the cat is actually not this cat. The other cat is the oldest animal in the house.
Okay.
That came from before my wife and I got married. Then after that, we got Buddy, which was our beagle, and we had both of them until we moved into the house. Right after we moved into the house, I went right out to get another dog. That's when we got Chloe. And then we stumbled across getting this cat. And I'm like, okay, that's it. We have too many animals. I'm crowded. And right about then is when I get the frantic call that she's having kittens.
So Wayne's got a puppy slash cat slash I don't even know what the hell mill going on at his home.
We have 9 animals in our house right now.
Oh my God.
So, all right. So since this is pretty much turned into a bonus episode anyway, we'll save the RPG topic we were trying to set up for next show, which was the use of animal companions and familiars in role-playing games and controlling them and setting boundaries on them and developing them and things, ways you can use them in your plot and all these neat things that Doctor Who talk and 24 and everything else has squeezed out of this show. Well, but
I could probably do a Doctor Who podcast.
Well, I figure though, all right.
I could too.
Next episode, between what we talked about in 192 of setting up a game for success and between this animal companion thing, we definitely have a solid RPG laser focus 194.
since we're talking about my animal woes, I do have one other one. When we got Chloe, I remember the first thing Dan told me, because Chloe is a part boxer, the very first thing Dan told me was, you're insane.
I don't think insane was the word I used.
That dog has too much energy, you're never going to be able to handle her. Well, we discovered this last week, she can jump the fence too. So we can't even let our big dog out in the backyard. We have to walk her.
Let me give some pet advice to anyone listening to this show.
Don't get pets.
I'm not a good example.
People go out, and this is with dogs in particular, they get a breed that sounds cool or looks cool without first investigating its personality. There's a great website, dogbreedinfo.com. I think once again, I'll link it in the show notes. Since there's so much to do with role-playing games. But you can go out there and while all animals are individuals and they do have some distinction, there are definite breed trends and you need to know what you're getting yourself into. And when Wayne tells me, yeah, I got Labrador boxer mix.
Yep.
This is a dog that has no off switch. Like my dogs, you walk in the door, they get excited. They're knocking off the walls for 2 minutes and then they settle down and go to sleep. Those dogs do not have a damn off switch. And I told Wayne, it's like, you are nuts. I had the same conversation with Christian. He ended up getting an American Bulldog. I told him before he's getting it, don't get this dog. You're not going to be able to handle it. He got it. He wasn't able to handle it. It picked up aggressive habits from another dog in the household, but was younger, had less boundaries, and was more physically imposing, and actually became a threat, and ended up having to be... It had a tragic ending. I don't know all the details. I don't want all the details. I'll just leave it at that. But Wayne, let me ask you a question as a pet owner, because I have had the most peculiar thing happen to me in a role-playing game.
Okay.
Role-playing game? Shut your mouth.
That is animal-related. We have talked about, in the past on this show, letting players, or even gamers that just happen to be passing through, play an NPC in your game. For example, let's say there's a scene where Chad's character's in a bar, and I just need a raucous drunk for him to interact with. And somebody at the table just takes on the role and starts playing that person. Maybe because I told them to, or they just did it on their own and we just all run with it. You know, it's not a major plot thing. They're not playing the head bad guy. It's just an incidental NPC. Gives them some fun and, you know, it's a great time. I did it at Fear the Con 3 in one of my Epoch Risos games unexpectedly because Chris Mays from Kicked in the Dice Bags showed up at one of my Epoch Risos games because he thought he'd signed up for it. I'm like, well, you know what? There's actually a major NPC that runs through this plot. I briefed him on what the NPC needed to do and had him play a plot device throughout the entire
game. Dan, what does this have to do with kittens or Doctor Who?
This is what I'm getting to.
Oh, okay.
Wayne, have you ever had a pet play an NPC? I have a story that I swear to you, I am not making up. Have you ever had okay. So one of the best campaigns I've ever played, and I've mentioned this several times, was a Star Wars game where I was playing a guy working for the Empire. He was one of the Circles of the Emperor or whatever, taken straight from the TIE Fighter video game. And his mission was to hunt down and to kill Force users, unlicensed Force users or whatever they are. And he was working with a guy who was his registered slave who happened to be a Force user that had saved his life. And basically the deal was he saved his life and Nerd Turner's not going to kill him. Okay, blah, 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 gaming story I'm not going to get into. We're playing this game in my first apartment, which had a breakfast bar. And I don't think that's local lingo.
All you can eat bacon your apartment?
But for I don't think that's local lingo. But basically, for anyone that's not familiar with this, it's you have a dining room on one side of the wall and a kitchen on the other. And the wall between them has a large opening with like a bar and a pass-through.
That does have a name. It's not a breakfast nook. It's a...
Yeah, but it's basically where...
Oh, God, I forget what it's called.
If you're in the kitchen, you could turn around, put things on this counter, and people in the dining room could take it off that counter into the dining room. It's I don't... Whatever it's called. And we were playing a scene where our characters were in some generic Star Wars cantina, the Color Alien Inn. And, you know, there's whatever going on. And I swear to you, I am not making this up. She has never done this before and has never done this since. As Tim and I role playing out being this bar, I turn to my left and Pearl, she's the dog that I had back then, still have her now. She's part retriever, part shepherd, we think. We're not 100% sure. We know she's mostly retriever, but she's a fairly large dog.
We don't talk about that side of the family.
Had gone into the kitchen, had gotten up on her hind legs, was standing on her hind legs with her front paws on the bar, looking at us from the kitchen like she's preparing to serve us food. And she became the Wookiee bartender. I swear to you, I am not making this up.
I didn't think Star Wars could get any more dorky.
I have never in my entire life seen an animal.
Even your pets are nerds.
You know, the only story that I can think of that you guys have told me that compares to that was when you were gaming at Dave's house one day when the cat rides the ceiling tile from
That was just comedy. That had nothing to do with the game. That wasn't the cat That's was not playing an NPC. Yeah, the cat
evil self.
The cat climbs up into the ceiling. For anyone who hasn't heard the story, the cat climbs up into the ceiling. And it's one of those things where it's kind of a drop ceiling. And so there's these panels. I don't know what they're made out of. But there's these insulated white panels that line a framework on the ceiling. The cat gets up there and it's kind of fat. So one of them falls through and this cat just comes sailing down from the ceiling, riding the ceiling panel like a surfboard, and then hits the ground and takes off.
Nice.
And that was actually, I think, a game mastering tip. I mean, some game masters, when things get boring, they blow something up. Whoever was running that game just drops a cat from the ceiling. Mm-hmm.
I have to say, I think, Dan, you're obviously a pet owner. Wayne, you're obviously a pet owner. Pat, you and I don't own pets.
Not currently. I did, but
yeah.
Not
well, if you used to live on a farm, you probably had a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
And
most of them were ticks.
Chris, you don't own any pets, do you?
He had dinosaurs.
Not currently. We did have a dog recently, and then when I was a kid, we had dogs all the time.
I
had a pet hamster.
I've never owned a dog or cat.
You
never
fish.
As a kid, I had about 4 fish, and my parents tell me that when I was a little kid, I had a turtle that we eventually set free. I don't remember the turtle at all, and I am not a pet person at all. And I currently own 2 frogs named Iggy and Pop, and they have a lust for life.
You know what? I decided at one point that I wanted a desk pet. Mm-hmm. Just a real,
that's what I have.
Yeah,
too.
I wanted a real low maintenance. Pets. This was actually for home, not for work, but I wanted a desk pet, real low maintenance, just something to kind of distract my mind a little bit while I'm trying to work or write or program or whatever, just because I need something to kind of take some cycles out of my brain, just because I have a lot of background noise in my mind all the time. And so we went to an exotic pet store to get turtles and instead came home with a prairie dog. And that was a whole lot more high maintenance. It was also a whole lot more personable. Came to learn they have an incredible personality. Actually, after Fear the Con 3 when we were at the zoo, I was trying to teach people how to communicate with them. Because you actually can, like, communicate with them. They have a relatively sophisticated language that is not all that hard to imitate. But anyway.
See, I had the same problem. I needed something at my desk that I could look at and zone out for a minute. So I've had fish at my desk before.
Well,
You should go to do what I do. Go to Brookstone. It's only $40. You get the Frogosphere. And it's great because PETA hates them. I mean, if you type in Brookstone Frogosphere into Google, the first hit is Brookstone. Next 520 hits is PETA telling me how evil I am for having a pet.
I got defeated trying to get a wallaby because we found a place. We actually found a couple not that far from here that breeds them and raises them. We just didn't have the means to care for one properly.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm working on an otter. That's going to be my next one.
I am
one.
Not a pet person. I do not like animals.
I like
frogs.
Dogs.
Are
I
hands off and
dog.
Low maintenance, and I love my frogs, but I am not a pet person.
I know I you used to hassle me about the sea people I had on my desk, which are basically brine shrimp.
I didn't hassle you about. I thought they were actually cool. He had like
brine shrimp.
Yeah, I mean. It was like a whole kit, and you bought it at a toy store.
Yeah.
They used to call them sea monkeys.
Sea monkeys, yeah.
And the whole reason I bought it was
because... Sea monkey ads in the comic books.
Yep.
The whole reason I bought that was because I didn't want all the hassle of the fish tank anymore. And so when the last fish died, because I did a cleaning of it, and they didn't survive the cleaning, I went with something a little simpler.
Mm-hmm.
I cleaned a fish tank once.
All right, so let's see. When we originally set out to do this, this was supposed to be episode 193 and be about role-playing games, and instead turned into a bonus episode, which, that's fine.
I have to say, on the role-playing game front, I don't like animals in real life. I don't hate them. I don't like them. I don't like being around dogs and cats and pets. I just don't care for it. But I love having animal companions in role-playing games.
And
I love it when my PCs have pets.
And we will come back to that in 193. Which this was 193, but the new 193,
yeah. the real and true 193,
yeah.
193 point.
We will come back to animal companions and setting up your games for success. So in the meantime, even though this was a total slew of non sequiturs, I hope you guys enjoyed the geek talk.
Yeah,
have a great week, and we will catch you next time.
Yo,
see ya.